My name is Kay Marano, and I grew up here in Spokane. Came here as a baby when my dad was being laid off from Boeing, and he got a job here at the city of Spokane. So we moved the family over, and I'm actually in the house that I grew up as a kid in, that I was able to then purchase from my parents just a few years ago. But yeah, Spokane is home, and I absolutely love it, and I am looking forward to trying to represent it better.
So tell me about your occupation. What do you do for your day job?
I work for the Spokane Low Income Housing Consortium. It actually started 30 years ago when the nonprofit organizations that do serve low-income folks with housing, so SNAP, Catholic Charities, Volunteers of America, Habitat for Humanity, got together and said, we're all repeating each other's efforts in trying to talk to lawmakers about what our needs are and in trying to talk to the community about, you know, why low-income housing is of value in their community and what that really means. We should have somebody else do this for us. So they started a coalition, and just 3 years ago, I became the executive director for that coalition to be able to provide that for them, talking to the lawmakers, talking to the community, and also providing the service providers with education about best practices on maintaining their buildings to make sure that the housing lasts.
So have you just been at the consortium for those 3 years?
Or correct.
Did you work? Okay.
Yeah, before that, I worked for both Catholic Charities and for Volunteers of America, trying to serve folks in Spokane. And mostly in the background, you know, I did administrative kinds of things. I did fundraising. I did accounting to let other people do their jobs better of actually direct service provision. And so it's something that I enjoy. It's something that I really liked being a part of to say, how can I serve the people of Spokane? But how can I use my talents in my own creative way?
So you made reference to what you do with the consortium, but let me ask you to explain that again. What are the types of things that you do as head of that organization?
Absolutely. I provide education, and some of that is to developers to say, here's some funding sources that you might not be aware of, or some other ways that, you know, you can look at what zoning we have, and is that going to work with what you're trying to build? Especially when we have changes that are coming through. So changes in legislation, changes in city ordinances, to get that information out and try and share it to folks. But then I also talk to community groups when people are trying to build in a specific location and the community is saying, well, I don't know if I really want that here, or, you know, maybe not in my backyard, to be able to tell them about the benefits and what that would provide for them so that they can be certainly more accepting of it, but also maybe even in support of it because they would realize the value that it could bring. And then finally, talking to lawmakers. I talk to legislators, I talk to city council, I talk to county officials, all different levels, to say, this is what the needs are that we have here in Spokane, but also, you know, how can they help us with that? And what kind of legislation would help us with that? Or, you know, is it funding? What kinds of things do we need to do to better housing for our community?
So I assume that's all behind your decision to run for the legislature.
It has a very large part to play, yes. In the folks that I was serving or helping to get served, I was noticing that there are a lot of groups that really aren't represented. And I was also seeing, you know, how come we can serve this group of people but not those? Or how come we can provide these services but we can't do other things? And the more questions I asked, I kept being told, well, that's how the legislation was written, or that's what the budget line states, so we have to stick to those practices. And I said, well, why didn't they include these other things? And the answer was, they didn't know. No one told them. And I said, oh, I'm going to do this education thing, which is why I started at SLIC, Spokane Low Income Housing Consortium. And I said, you know, I can teach. This is going to be great. So I worked on that for the 3 years. And I thought it was going really, really well, especially talking to the state legislators about why we need more funding in the Housing Trust Fund, which is part of the capital budget. Got both Republicans and Democrats to say, we need more money. And we got people from Spokane, both Republican and Democrat, to write the request letter to increase the amount to $200 million from the, you know, 130-ish that they'd been doing in recent years. And I thought, yes, this is perfect. I've done my job. But that capital budget was never passed. It never came to the floor for a vote because it was held hostage over the water rights bill. And the folks that had the majority said, if you don't agree with us on this water rights bill, we're just not going to pass the capital budget. So for the first time in the state history, We didn't get a capital budget. And I thought, you can't do that. You're lawmakers. You have two things to do. You pass laws and you write budgets. How do you not do half your job and stay employed? So I was complaining to my family, and they said, so what are you going to do about it? And I went, yeah, I can take action. I don't have to sit back and just try to educate and then let someone else take over. I can step up and run. And not just then work to educate others, but actually work to do the job.
So, of course, in 2018, they did pass a fix for Hearst, and yes, they did pass a capital budget. How yes. much is for low-income housing in that budget?
They did not do the 200 that they asked for. It was about 130.
Okay. Not enough in your mind?
Well, considering the fact that back before 2007, when things crashed, we were at 200 million. And so during that recession, they decreased that the amount was, and it hasn't made it back up to where they were in 2007 yet. I know that the economy is doing better. I know that we have more funding available. We also have a great need. I mean, we have a housing crisis across the state. In Spokane, we have less than 1% vacancy rate. I talk to folks on a daily basis who say, you know, where can I find a place to live? And everywhere you go, there's a waiting list. And I talked to one gentleman who said, you know, he was being asked, is there a list of some kind as to who has someplace available? And he said, you want to find the best list? Talk to someone who's actually been trying to find housing, because they have a list of all the different people that they've called. And he himself had tried it, and he started calling people in March, and he didn't find housing until October. And that's absurd. What are you supposed to do during those months of time when you can't find a place to live? And you're trying. I mean, he had the ability to pay rent. He just couldn't find a place to actually have an available opening that he was willing to live in.
So if you get elected to go to Olympia, how do you start to solve this problem? Is it more a case of throwing more money at it? But are there other things that you would be interested in doing too?
Yeah, there's more than just throwing money at it, because I think we need to be smart. I mean, we have a limited amount of resources. We can't just assume that there's all the money in the world. Housing is certainly a big issue for me. And I think that we need to rethink housing in our communities as part of infrastructure. Because, you know, if we have an infrastructure package that works on our roads and it works on providing that housing, it brings jobs, it adds to the economy, it does things for the community that are all beneficial. So money's a piece of it. But we also need to be trying to keep people who are housed safely in their homes. So, for example, with the McCleary decision for education, a big portion of the funding for education has come from property taxes. 40% of the property tax money from Spokane County goes to fund education. We have people who are on fixed incomes who own their own home. So they're seniors, they're disabled, but they own their property. Property tax keeps going up, and they're being honestly evicted from their own homes that they've purchased. So we need to look at other solutions for where that funding comes from. And I know that folks say, well, the property tax is more stable because in a recession it's less likely to go down than a sales tax or something else. And that may be true. It still fluctuates, but not to the same extent. But it's not the best solution if it's actually causing our homelessness and if it's adding to the problem. And with that, you know, property values go up, so rents increase. And we've seen in Spokane the apartments where, you know, we just got a rent increase for $475. That's absurd. No one can absorb that every month. Another just came out of, you know, over $200 a month of an increase. People can't budget that way. They need to have some protections to say, what is my rent going to be? And is that going to be reliable? How much notice am I going to get for that? Because typically, after that 1 year lease is up, you go to a month to month situation. And at the end of that, you know, as that continues, a landlord or organization, whichever, can give you 20-day notice to say you have to be out in 20 days for no reason. They don't have to explain. They don't have to say why. Some of those things I think that the legislature should take a look at and say, should we put in a just cause eviction, which gives a very good list of these are justifiable reasons to say a person has to leave. If they're not paying their rent, if they're causing damage, if they're creating a nuisance, all of those things are included and are just cause. But you can't just give someone an eviction notice and not tell them why. So I think that some of that legislation would help as well to give some tenants the protection that they need to think, hey, I can be stable in this home.
So during your 3 years at the consortium, are you finding that more developers are interested in doing low-income housing or less interest?
There's definitely interest. It's a question of funding. With the most used type of funding, it's called the tax credit, low-income housing tax credit program. And businesses are offered credits for their own business tax to invest in these properties. Properties under that program have to be kept as a low-income property in that community for 30 to 50 years. And it's very specific in the contract of how that's worked out. So it's a good investment for the community. That property has to be maintained, upkeep has to be done, it has to look good. They're constantly evaluated to say, you know, what is the service? How is it working? Are they keeping the building full? Because they can't let the occupancy drop either. You know, they have to attract people to be in this building in order for that business to continue getting that tax credit. The challenge is it has a limited amount of money. So there are people who definitely want to do it, but it's a question of can they find land that they think this is a good place that we can actually put in housing where it's going to be accepted and it has grocery stores nearby or laundry facility if they're not going to have one in the building or services that the folks might need. Is it close to a bus service or something else so that they can have transportation and try and get to jobs? But the question is always, you know, where can we build and how much can we get for the funding to do so? Because obviously the operation of that building as well has to be done in ways other than just the rent because it's offered at low income amounts. So it's a balance.
Okay, so low income housing is kind of in your wheelhouse, so to speak. Are there other issues that you're pretty, you know, you think are pretty important that you want to work on?
Absolutely. Healthcare is a huge one. And I mean, it ties to housing closely. We have people who, you know, you pay for your regular insurance, but then you can't afford to go to a doctor and actually have treatment because you have additional copays or you have other things. And if you get a prescription, that's an additional cost. And some prescriptions are extremely expensive. So we have an insurance series of programs, but it's not really serving people to the best ability that people can get the healthcare they need. I would love to see some kind of universal healthcare come through at the federal level. That would obviously be the best choice. Not something I can do as a state legislator, but you know, I can certainly encourage them to say, please go that direction. If they can't, however, bills have been in place through the federal government that say states can look at doing that within their own state borders. And as a legislator, that's something I would certainly want to pursue. Could we do some kind of universal healthcare within the state of Washington, similar to what Canada First did, because they actually are provincial. It's not a nationwide program. So, you know, we can take a look at what other systems work well. How did they make that work well? Do we use, you know, the VA has a similar system where regionally they have caps on what a particular service costs or what a prescription costs based on the approximate cost in that region. That could be expanded. Obviously, the VA has its own issues of how many doctors and people are concerned about the waiting lists. And so those factors would want to be considered to say, when we set this up, we need to make sure it's able to serve everyone. Education is another issue that I really want to try and tackle. I know that we have met the basic requirement of McCleary, but again, how we fund it is a concern. And is the funding going the right places? Are we doing the things with that money that are helping the kids? We know that we need more support staff in the schools. We know that the teachers were originally stated to have a 15% increase in their wages, and now they're getting their contracts and they're seeing 3%, 4%, and 5%. So where is the disconnect on that? Why is that different than what they were told? We need to do a better job of trying to say, this is exactly where that money's going and be as transparent as possible about that. And with education, I also would really like to focus on more of our trade skill opportunities, internships, whether that be through the unions or apprenticeships, because we have a lot of kids who, when they graduate from high school, they say, I got to get a career and it's got to pay for myself and my family. What do I do? And they go to college and they may not know exactly where they want to go. So they try several things and they think, this is what I'm going to major in. and then they don't get a job in that field, and they have a huge amount of debt, and they're not any better off than where they graduated from high school, except obviously now they're way in the hole and can't afford to look for a house, can't afford to pay their own rent because everything's going to that debt. So I think if we can expand some of the trade skill programs and really let folks know that you can make a living wage and these are great jobs that you can be proud of. You know, my dad worked as a carpenter when he was putting himself through college. And as a kid, he would drive me back around through Everett when we went on family trips to say, I built that house. And he was proud of that. So I think that folks need to have a different perception of, you know, what those trade skill jobs are like and a knowledge of how that really can be a good paying career for them to go into.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you something that I don't think is going to make it into this story because I want to focus on you, but why did you pick this particular race? You had an open seat, there was the possibility, mm-hmm. and you chose to run against an incumbent. Why did you do that?
I chose it before there was an open seat, and that was really why. I didn't realize that Mike Bumgartner was going to pull out and go for a county race, and I knew someone who really wanted a Senate seat, so I said, great, go with that. Between Mike Vols and Jeff Holey, I know that Jeff Holey has a lot of similar leanings toward, you know, housing and homeless services, things like that. And I said, I would rather work with him than to try and go against him. So I picked Mike Vols. He's only been there for 2 years. And as I talked to a lot of people about him, it was always who? And I thought, well, if folks don't know who you are, what are you accomplishing? And to be frank, he bragged on the fact that as a rookie representative, he was selected to be on the Capital Budget Committee because he's got an accounting background. And I thought, great, you were on the Capital Budget Committee, but you let them not pass it. And so I said, no, that's the candidate that I think needs to be changed. So that's why I picked that race.
Okay, so there are a lot of people who are feeling this is a good year for Democrats to run. Mm-hmm. Do you agree with that?
I do. There are a couple of different things that may or may not. We don't know how Spokane's going to go. With the primary coming up, we might get a taste of what that looks like. You still don't know because different people vote in the primary than vote in the general. But what we've seen nationwide, more women are running than ever have run before, and they are winning in their primaries. So we also see that a lot of Democrats are having success in places that they haven't in the past. Some of that, I'm sure, is backlash against Trump. Some of that is backlash against specific policies like the immigration policy, things like that, that are very visible. So what we're seeing in primaries is obviously encouraging to me, because if that happens here, the race that Mike Vols and Lynette Veers were in 2 years ago was only 8 or 9 point difference at most. And we're seeing 15 and 16 point swings. Means I have a great chance, but we'll see. I mean, that's up to the voters. You can speculate and you can guess, but until the voters actually decide, we don't know.
Well, and I guess the one thing with running against Vols is you're guaranteed to move past the primary. You've got another 3 months. You don't have to face four people in a race.
That is correct. And I actually am grateful for that because I think it's challenging when you have to prove your way through the primary and then start against another opponent. I'm thankful that it is just the two of us and I can use this time to really tell people who I am and focus on why I'm running. Then after when we, you know, see how things go in the primary and have some idea of, you know, did anyone hear that and do they know who you are and is it working, then to be able to spread and hopefully have some more, you know, debates or things where we can have Mike and I both together and talk about our differences, talk about, you know, what we agree on and let the voters choose. I respect that system. I think that our democracy is what it should be as far as the people need to choose who represents them. And unfortunately, I think frequently they don't know who represents them because they're not involved. And so the more publicity that we can give that, the better, because it helps them make informed decisions.